I wanted a mission, and for my sins, they gave me Right Club Atlanta.
So
this is always the worst part.
Light versus dark.
Oh, we could do a, you know, a good versus evil kind
good
of thing.
Good versus evil is good. Where yeah, do we go with that?
Have you guys heard the story of the godworm?
The godworm?
Yeah, it's this theory that posits that, like, there's this giant worm, like, billions of years ago, and he just started splitting into pieces, and he just kept splitting until, like, worms became ubiquitous.
It's like worms are everywhere.
We'll table that.
I just got fired.
Hello, I'm Nicholas Tkosky, host and viceroy of Right Club Atlanta.
And I'm Consigliere Mike Johns. January 2013, Highland Ballroom.
Two opposing writers, two opposing topics, 7 minutes apiece.
First on deck, Nicole Isaac, the writer behind NerdyRomantic.com. Nicole took a walk in the woods with her take on Light.
All right! We've got Nicole Isaac with Light! Nicole, I'm putting 7 minutes on the time timer. Are you ready?
Yes. Yes.
Are you sure?
Yes.
Right Club audience, are you ready? Nicole Isaac with Light. And 3, 2, 1. Begin.
I met Eric Hyman, yes, Hyman, in second grade art class. The teacher, Miss Lee, paired us for an exercise to sketch the other person's eye. After a half hour, she did a once around the room to take in the results. Then she doubled back to Eric, grabbed his paper off his desk, and taped it to the center of the chalkboard so we could all see. Behold, she bellowed, the only work in the entire class to contain this. She pointed to a little white square Eric had drawn in the lower left corner of my pupil. Eric, will you be so kind as to tell everyone what that square is? Sure, he obliged. It's the reflection of light in Nicole's eye. And that's Eric. Even at 8 years old, he grasped the intricate workings of the universe. Smart in the kind of way that can't be taught. Not this short bus rider. I was wearing a training bra before I fully understood that the sun didn't actually rise in the day and duck back down at night. Somehow, though, from that second grade eye exercise on, Eric and I were inseparable. By fifth grade, I was spending more time at his house than my own. We'd play Nintendo, make fart sounds, prank call people Bart Simpson style, and then when his phone rang, we'd answer, Buster Hyman here, or Papa Hyman, how may we help you? And 3, 2, 1, collapse into side-splitting hysterics. After high school, life pulled us in different directions, but we still kept in touch. We wrote letters, we'd visit and use holidays for random cross-country road trips. And then somehow, after 22 years of being his platonic partner in crime, I started to have this reoccurring dream. In it, Eric and I were, how shall I put this, slapping the uglies. He'd call as usual, only now my heart would race and my cheeks would flush and I'd catch myself uttering the most asinine shit like, I hear a nasty cold front is moving into the Bay Area. Eventually it hit me, Eureka, I had a crush on Eric. I decided to fly out west to tell him in person. I took a red eye, he took the day after I arrived off work. It was Easter Sunday and we made a plan to honor our bearded Jewish broheim in high holy style. A day hike in Big Basin State Park where we test out the newest yield of Eric's homegrown medical marijuana crop. A strain he named Joe Pesci. By early afternoon, we reached the Pine Mountain Ranger Station, home to the famous Buzzard's Bluff. Elevation, 2,600 feet. About 20 minutes into the hike, and for the next hour, the incline was so steep I could literally reach my hand out and touch the path in front of me. This was good. I couldn't even talk if I wanted to. Must conserve breath. And then we made it to the top. We found a sweet little nook carved out of the stone with a panoramic view of the sweeping sequoias. Eric lit his Joe Pesci joint and passed it my way. I took a generous hit, held the smoke in my lungs, and puffed out a burning, tear-filled exhale. I looked at Eric. In my head, I said, if not for your friendship, I'd be a bath salt snorting juggalo right now. What came out was, did you ever notice how feet are like leg hands? I opted to put a pin in any life-altering revelations until I wasn't high off my Joe Pesci gourd. We stayed on Buzzard Bluff long enough for the actual namesakes to return to their nest after a full day of scavenging. Eric and I collected our things, scarfed down the only nourishment we had, a bag of chili cheese bugles and half a bottle of water, and began the descent. Only this time, the trail marker on the tree in front of us was green, not the red one we followed up. But hey, what's the difference? Green means go. Green means shortcut. Our confidence was airtight. We moved in step, enchanted by the scenery before us. I rehearsed the lines under my breath. I thought you should know that for about a year now, I've wanted to kiss you. Short, sweet, direct. Okay, now out loud. But before I could open my mouth, Eric interrupted. I think we're lost. It was like how you don't feel pain until someone points out that you're bleeding. The second he said the word lost, I started to sense the temperature drop and the night set in. Now the redwood canopy kept the slightest sliver of starlight at bay. At first, we used the glow of Eric's iPhone to guide us, covering as much distance as we could in each 6-second power window before it shut off again. But eventually the battery died and we were left in near total darkness. I say near because I could still see the 2x2-inch luminescent decals on the back of Eric's New Balance kicks as he stumbled in front of me. They were my beacons, bouncing like fireflies on a trampoline. Up, down, up, down. Follow the New Balance decals. Don't think about Blair Witch. Don't think about don't think about piercing screams from douchebag Grizzly Man documentary. Up, down, up, down. My thighs felt like sandbags. My tongue felt like sawdust. I would have set a church on fire for a smoothie. Up, down, up, down. I wanted to curl up inside one of those giant sequoia trunks and go to sleep. I wanted to dream of heaven where all the unsolved cliffhangers of life were resolved, like what the fuck was lost about? And how many licks does it take to get to the center of a Tootsie Pop? I wanted to say, save yourself, but leave Joe Pesci with me. And then I saw it up ahead, lights, little white squares of light flickering in the distance. Eric, cars, up, down, the New Balance decals bounced furiously as Eric broke out into a run with me in hot pursuit. We came out onto the road just below the entrance to Pine Mountain. We darted to Eric's truck, sitting totally alone in the parking lot. He turned on the engine. The clock radio flickered 3:17 a.m. We had been walking nonstop for 12 straight hours. No food, no water. My brain buzzed. I closed my eyes, and the last thing I remember saying before passing out was, I can't feel my leg hands. Because we didn't die that night, and this isn't heaven, and we're not granted all the answers to all the cliffhangers.
Next up, Lauren Tredo, contributing writer at Per JTL. Lauren revisited the holy terror of ABC's TGIF lineup with her take on Dark.
All right, Lauren, I'm putting 7 minutes on the time timer. Lauren, are you ready?
Yes.
Right Club audience, are you ready? Lauren Tredo with Dark in 3, 2, 1. Begin.
When I was in fourth grade, my Aunt Joanne sent me the trauma-inducing children's books, Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark. Do you know these books? They had these illustrations that looked like someone drew a Rorschach ink block with the blood spatter from a Dexter murder scene while tripping on ether during a nuclear holocaust. They were terrifying. These books sparked in me, though, a paralyzing fear of and lifelong attraction to the dark. The dark is amazing. Think about it. The human heart and brain, the organs we talk about to invoke our very humanity, they never see the light of day unless they're exhumed by a surgeon. And when you write, you are darkening a bright computer screen or a blank white page with black words. A little darkness makes everything more interesting. So to illustrate this point, I've taken the most fucked up tale I remember from the Scary Stories series, a tale about two men who make a scarecrow who comes to life, and I've fused it with something else from my childhood that is pretty unrealistically bright, the 1980s sitcom Full House, which is the television equivalent of an elephant dart to the face. I've meshed these two wildly opposed elements of my own terrified childhood in an effort to prove that every story is more interesting with a little added darkness. So here's my take on Full House as a children's horror story. I call it Have Mercy. Night had just fallen on one perfect hill of pastel townhouses in San Francisco. Joey Gladstone and Jesse Katsopoulos had just finished tucking Michelle into bed and were sitting around the dimly lit kitchen. What are we going to tell the girls about Danny? Joey Gladstone asked. He didn't even leave a note. Danny Tanner was a recent widower, left with three young girls to raise on his own. He had disappeared days before without a trace. Becky's gone too, Jesse said, referring to his fiancée, who was Danny Tanner's sultry talk show co-host. Jesse and Joey looked at each other for a long time. Neither of them had heard the quiet padding of oddly deliberate footsteps on the stairs. Neither of them saw the red pigtails poking up at the edge of the table like feeble ginger voodoo dolls. Where's Daddy? Mattel Shannard said. Pronouncing the words with absolutely no inflection, as if someone off stage had just prompted the line. Their new puppy Comet saw her and slinked away, whimpering. Bad dog, she said. She never broke her soulless gaze. The men were beginning to panic. This wasn't a problem they could solve by putting on a Santa costume or singing one of their campy ad jingles for Kitty Crispies. They couldn't call the police because Jesse was a bad boy who wore a leather jacket and rode a motorcycle. And the older girls were away at summer camp learning catchphrases like, don't have a cow, and how rude. Joey brought Michelle back to her room and tucked her in among at least 20 dolls that were bigger than she was. Then he had an idea that changed everything. Let's make a doll the size of a man, he said to Jesse. It will be a fun way to distract Michelle until we figure out where Danny went. Also, it works in cartoons. It should look like Danny, Jesse said. They made a lanky doll out of old sacks stuffed with straw. They gave it Danny's pointy nose and tiny beaded eyes. Then they added dark hair and his thin, twisted smirk. They called it Danny. There was no word from the real Danny Tanner. Whenever something went wrong, the two men took it out on the Danny doll. They would curse at him, kick him, or punch him. This is from the actual Scary Stories story. So, sometimes one of them would take the food they were eating and smear it on the doll's face. Then the two men would howl with laughter. One night, the men came downstairs to find Michelle staring at the Danny doll in calculated silence. Michelle looked up at them in the dark. One does not become enlightened by imagining figures of light, but by making the darkness conscious. Dude, she said. That's Carl Jung. Well, you're a little Jung to be up this late, Joey said. Followed by his own campy laughter and his favorite catchphrase, cut it out. One night after Joey had smeared the Danny doll's face with food, it grunted. Did you hear that? Jesse asked. How could he grunt? Joey asked. He's just a sack of straw. It's not possible. So they left Danny sitting in the corner of the kitchen. They didn't talk to him or hit him anymore. Now and then the doll grunted, but that was all. After a few days, they decided there was nothing to be afraid of. Maybe a mouse or some insects had gotten inside Danny and were making those sounds, also from the original story. Joey and Jesse went back to their old ways. When they felt playful, they joked with Danny. When they felt mean, they treated him as badly as ever. Then Jesse noticed something that frightened him. Danny is growing, he said. I was thinking the same thing, Joey said. Maybe it's just our imagination, Jesse replied. We've been recording advertising jingles in the basement unsupervised for too long. The next morning, Danny the doll was missing. The men heard a sound like something being dragged across the roof. In the evening, Danny was in the corner of the yard. They looked at Michelle, who was planning out her tween video empire at the kitchen table. She couldn't lift that thing, Jesse said, and Joey nodded uneasily. The two men had no idea what the doll would do next. They were afraid. They decided to leave that very same day. As they drove up the hill away from the house, Danny was nowhere in sight. They felt like they had escaped a great danger and began joking and singing. But when they had gone only a block or two, they realized that they had left Comet the dog. Neither one wanted to go back, but they had no choice. "There really is nothing to be afraid of," they told one another. "After all, what could a doll do?" They drew straws to see who would go back. It was Joey. "You guys stay here," he said. Jesse parked at the top of the hill. 15 minutes later, Comet came running up the road to the car, whimpering, and Jesse exhaled with relief. He opened his door to let the dog in and saw that Michelle was smiling eerily from her car seat, staring back at the house. Jesse followed Michelle's gaze, expecting to see Joey. He did not see him anywhere. He did see Danny. The doll was on the roof of the townhouse. As Jesse watched, Danny kneeled and stretched out a bloody skin to dry in the sun.
So, which side do you fall on? Light or dark?
The choice is yours, Luke. Let us know your answer at WriteClubAtlanta.com. And while you're at it, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter at WriteClubATL.
Hashtag less than 12 parsecs.
And come see us on the second Wednesday of every month at the Highland Ballroom.
Or, if you want to be our lover.
Or, you know, write for us.
Right. Drop us a writing sample at writeclubatlanta@gmail.com.
Or you can download this and many podcasts on iTunes. Rate us 5 stars or GTFO.
Our co-producer and Marchioness is Emily Philp. Thanks to the good folks at the Highland Ballroom, Chelsea Rafflow,
Claire Christie,
and Jeremiah Prescott. Write Club's fearless overlord is Ian Belknap, and everything is proceeding as he has foreseen. Keep on his good side at writeclubrules.com. In Atlanta, I'm your humble viceroy, Nick Tikoski.
And I'm Consigliere Mike Johns, urging you to not go gentle into that dark night.
Or, for that matter, Dark Knight Rises.
That was really a piece of shit.
Oof.